Our second case this morning is 2020-629, Cleveland Botanical Garden versus Stacy K. Worthington DeRine et al. For the appellants, Mr. Fellerhoff.
Good morning, Madam Chief Justice. May it please the court. My name is Matt Fellerhoff, and I appear on behalf of the appellants and cross appellees, who are various heirs of their ancestor, Jephthah Wade. Jephthah Wade donated 73 acres of land to create Wade Park in Cleveland, Ohio. I request the opportunity to reserve 4 minutes for rebuttal. Ever since Jephthah Wade's gift in the 1800s, and ever since the Barris case was decided in 1885, my clients have worked with the city of Cleveland to try to assure that the intent of Jephthah Wade's gift and was followed, and it all worked for the benefit of the beneficiaries, the public. That has happened throughout this period until this matter arose. This matter arose when CBG initially approached my clients seeking to have my clients sign what was called a deed of limited release to allow CBG to charge admission to the property. What occurred was that deed of release actually included a total release of all rights for my clients of enforcement of Jephthah Wade's gift. They became alarmed by that. They became even more alarmed when a letter was written by the president of CBG indicating, apologizing for that misrepresentation, but then suggested her appreciation for Wade Park, describing Wade Park as that beautiful lawn beyond CBG's gates. CBG's gates, obviously, as this court is aware, included part of Wade Park. Then my clients were sued. My clients do not contend that a garden cannot exist in Wade Park. They do not seek to trigger the reversion. They only seek to enforce the agreement that was reached between the city of Cleveland and Jephthah Wade when it was established in the 1880s. They've spent hundreds of thousands of dollars, not for their personal benefit, but to assure the public's right to use the park. They had to do this because the city of Cleveland won't do this. In response, the city doesn't argue that it is trying to stick up for the beneficiaries, to assert the beneficiaries' rights. The city of Cleveland is asserting that it doesn't have to, that there is no agreement that requires the city of Cleveland to comply with the grant.
Council, why is this not open to the public?
The property is not open to the public because it has been fenced off. And that's a layered issue. It has been fenced off by the Cleveland Botanical Gardens because the city of Cleveland changed its policy and allowed the Botanical Gardens to fence off the property and charge admission. And it
right there, open to the public. Is there a phrase in conjunction with that that says free of charge?
It does not say that, but it is supposed to be open to the public at all times. And as is detailed in our brief, it is only open to the public, not considering when the public can pay money for the benefit of the Cleveland Botanical Gardens, less than 25% of the time. And that math is in the brief. Right. But the other issue is what has happened to those 11 acres. Not only is it supposed to be open to the public at all times, it also, the deed requires that the grant is only for park purposes and no other purposes. And what has happened here is that the city of Cleveland is charging the public admission charges to enter the city of Cleveland. The beneficiaries are the city of Cleveland citizens. The citizens who own the property are being charged admission to enter their property for the benefit of CBG. CBG.
Let me ask you sure. a little bit about both those things. So sure. I'm trying to understand what you think open to the public means. So I mean, I take it from your calculation that it's only open to the public 25% of the time, that you think to be open to the public, it has to be open 24 hours a day. Is that 24 hours a day, 7 days a week?
According to the rules of construction of a grant, especially one by a private devisee, the interpretation of the grant needs to be strict. The requirement is that it be open to the public at all times.
Just tell me out there, does that mean 24 hours a week, 7 days a week?
It does mean 24 hours a week, 24 hours a day. It's been like that for 70 years.
I mean, isn't it pretty routine for parks to have curfews? I mean, people generally don't feel good about people in parks at 4 a.m. And I mean,
Your Honor, I think
you can't be there after sunset.
I think what you're getting at is the conclusion that was made by the 8th District and the trial court about regulations that the city might impose.
I'm just trying to understand what you've said. It's only up to 25% of the time or something. I'm just trying to understand what you think open to the public means.
But the 25% of the time is not just a curfew in the evening. Okay, it is closed on Mondays.
Could they have a curfew?
Well, Your Honor, that isn't in the record.
You have a meaning that you think this phrase means. So I'm asking you, under your understanding, could they close it down after between sunset and sunrise?
Well, two things. The question is who? The Cleveland Botanical Gardens, certainly. It is a charitable gift from a private donor. The terms of that donation have to be construed strictly.
I get that. Just help me out. Can they close it or not? Can they close it or not?
Under the terms?
Can be closed at nighttime.
Under the terms of the donation, it cannot.
Cannot.
Can
there be any part of it that's not continuously open to the public? I mean, could they put a restaurant in there, or could they put a bathroom that's locked sometimes?
Your Honor, you're giving a number of hypotheticals that are not in the record.
I understand, but that's why we ask hypotheticals.
Well, I understand.
I understand what your definition would mean. So
the issue here is that we've had 70 years of cooperation with the Cleveland Botanical Gardens in the city of Cleveland. There have been instances where in the past there has been some difficulty in complying with the terms of the grant, where the parties have worked together. What has happened here is that the parties are not working together. In 11 acres of the grant, almost a seventh of the grant is being closed off to the public.
But the issue is really just what the phrase is in the. It doesn't really. The issue relates to cooperation, right? It's what the deeds.
Frankly,
so help me understand. Could they close any part of it off at all?
Not according to the terms of the grant.
So every inch of it has to be available to the public for free 24/7.
It needs to be open at all times to the public.
I mean,
so let me ask it a different way.
Sure.
If the Botanical Gardens 11 acres were open the same time the rest of the park was open, would that meet what the heirs want?
Yes.
Would that meet what the deed says?
Yes. The rest of the park is open with certain exceptions that I can get into, which involve agreements with my clients. Yes, if the Botanical Gardens was open as the rest of the park is, yes.
Mr. Fellerhoff, can I ask you a question? Well, one, I had a question too about the park's ability to regulate, the city's ability to regulate closures of parks. And I wasn't sure exactly whether that dealt more with curfew, which would be imposed everywhere in the area, even outside the park, which would naturally restrict access to the park, just based on the fact that you can't be in the city walking around a certain time, I guess. But another question dealing with the garage and paying and charging fees for the garage, does the deed or I think Mr. Wade anticipated an underground facility to charge? I mean, you can go to the park and not have to park in the garage. And that's under the park, which doesn't restrict access to any part of the park above ground. So is that really a similar analysis?
If I can address that, it is the underground. It is part of the gift. It is covered by the terms of the grant. The issue here
is the garage wasn't there at the time of the grant.
No, it wasn't. But the issue here, and I'm not saying a garage can't be there, but the garage is there, as is detailed in the record, for the purpose of raising money from non-park users for the benefit of the Cleveland Botanical Gardens. And in this case, the requirement under the grant is that the property be used for park purposes and no other purposes. And what is occurring here is that is another purpose. The purpose of providing an endowment for the Cleveland Botanical Gardens at the expense of the beneficiaries is a violation of the requirement that serve other purposes beyond.
So the garage is okay. So having the garage is okay, and charging is okay. It's just a matter of where the money goes.
There are two things. I'm talking about two different parts of the agreement. There is the part of the agreement that says open at all times. And whether the garage isn't open at all times if there is a gate and they're being charged admission for that. It's the same as walking into the 11 acres. Obviously, the 11 acres is a much bigger impact on the ability of the beneficiaries to use the property that was given to them by Jephthah Wade.
To how could
there be any envisioning of using what's beneath the park by Mr. Wade?
There was no envisioning, presumably, I don't know, obviously, of what was beneath the park. But still, what is beneath the park is part of the park and part of the grant. And if you're asking me, in applying the grant strictly, whether it applies, I'm applying the terms of the grant to your question. But the garage, again, is using the park to provide funds for the benefit of the Cleveland Botanical Gardens. Go ahead.
With that garage, I mean, some of that was paid for, I think, with bonds. So if the only people who were being charged to use the garage were people who were using the park, and you didn't have, for instance, monthly subscriptions from people who worked nearby and found it convenient to park there during the week, would that be a problem for the heirs? Because, you know, this was deeded in the horse and buggy days, and now we're in a different time.
It was deeded in the horse and buggy days, but the record here, but first, there are two things again. First of all, the record is that the Cleveland Botanical Gardens was advertising the use of the parking to other users, Case Western Reserve. It is a money-making operation for the benefit of the Cleveland Botanical Gardens.
Let's say they stopped doing that and only patrons who were using the park and needed a place to park were being charged. Would the heirs still have a problem with that?
That would not be that much of a problem. But again, the question goes to the money, because even if the bonds are paid off, then the money still continues to go to the Cleveland Botanical Gardens for its benefit, for the purposes that we've already outlined in the briefs. They're trying to raise money for it. And this is the issue. The money right now, based on the record as it is, we weren't entitled by the court's ruling to ask any questions and get any discovery about where the money went. But in deposition, we obtained testimony that indicated that the money was going to be used initially to pay off the debt for the construction that occurred there, and also was used to increase as a device to increase the membership of the Cleveland Botanical Gardens.
Well, if there's the money,
no restriction,
Mr. Fellerhoff, if the money is separate and discrete, if the I imagine there's a way to segregate admission fees and parking fees. So if the parking fee money was used to pay for the construction and the maintenance of the garage, is that acceptable?
That could be acceptable. That would be consistent with some of the cases that we provided. It would be consistent with the thought pattern in the Inc. case, which wasn't really addressed on these terms, where the proceeds from an eminent domain sale would only be maintained by the city if those proceeds went to park.
So if the construction was paid off, the maintenance was paid for, and there was extra revenue derived from parking fees, where should that money go?
That would need to go for the benefit of the park. It would be a wholly different matter, but it would need to go for the benefit of the park, not a separate private entity, the Cleveland Botanical Gardens, which, by the way, is now also controlled by Holden Parks, Holden, which is a larger entity. There is no control where that money is going to flow to after the debt is paid. That money can go anywhere, and that's part of the problem. It is not a park purpose. It is a Cleveland Botanical Gardens purpose.
Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. You've used your time. Now we're going to hear from, is it Mr. Levasseur for 8 minutes?
Good morning, Chief Justice O'Connor, and may it please the court. Eric Levasseur on behalf of the appellee, cross appellant, Cleveland Botanical Garden. Your honors, I'll be splitting my time this morning with my colleague from the city of Cleveland, Stu Hastings. I'll be addressing the issues regarding the Wade deed and the park use restriction at issue on the Wade defendant's appeal. Mr. Hastings will then be addressing the issues related to the Marketable Title Act at issue on our cross appeal. We would like to reserve 2 minutes for rebuttal on the cross appeal. Concerning the Wade defendant's appeal, in this case, the trial court and the Court of Appeals did nothing more than look to the admittedly clear and unambiguous terms of the Wade deed to determine that the Cleveland Botanical Gardens operations in Wade Park comport with the Wade deed's park use restriction.
Well, counsel, let me follow up then on my other question. Are there hours that the park is open and the botanical gardens are not?
Your honor, the park as a whole, there are no hours. There are hours of operation for the botanical gardens.
So the botanical gardens hours are a subset of the total hours the rest of the park is open.
I believe that would be fair to say, Your Honor.
Okay, thank you. So the botanical gardens are not open at all times?
No, Your Honor, I guess that's where we would disagree. We believe that the botanical gardens absolutely are open at all times to the public, consistent with the requirements of the Wade deed. The construction in this case that the Wade defendants seek to put on the Wade deed is that the one reference in the deed to open at all times to the public necessarily means, as Justice DeWine pointed out, 24/7, 365. It's a reference to hours on the clock, as the Wade defendants would have it. Your Honor, we believe that is an unreasonable construction of the deed.
And wholly, that's why I asked the question earlier, if the botanical gardens are open the same hours as the park is, would that be acceptable to the heirs? And your opposing counsel said yes. So, but right now the botanical gardens are open fewer hours than the park is open, correct?
That is correct, Your Honor. But again, it would be our position based on the case law and based on the Wade deed itself that the botanical gardens can maintain hours of operation and still be open at all times to the public.
Well, again, let me interrupt you right there too, because aren't there times when there are private functions going on at the botanical gardens that would not allow the public to enter? And I know that might be rare, but doesn't that happen?
Yes, Your Honor. There are certain times at which, for example, I think the way defendants know that there are occasionally weddings held at the botanical gardens. However, it would be our position that something of that nature would not vitiate the public use at issue in this case.
Why not?
Because, Your Honor, the public still has access to the park. The issue in the way deed is, does the public have access to the park? It does not require, as the 8th District appropriately recognized, that there be 24/7 absolute access to every square inch of Wade Park. That's obviously where there's a difference of opinion.
Right, there's that issue, then there's the issue of the limited hours that the Botanical Gardens is open, which is, as Justice Fischer noted, is a subset of the overall hours. And then there's the even limited subcategory of when the Botanical Gardens is being rented out or used for private use, then the public has no access to it, even though the facility is open, and even though the park is open. So that vitiates the all-time element also.
Well, but again, Your Honor, I guess in our view, it goes to the issue of when you talk about the park and when you look at the language of the deed, where it speaks to the park being open at all times to the public, that is not a reference to minutes or hours on the clock or every square inch of the park being open at all times. In this case, the 8th District properly found that open to public use does not require the area to be open to everybody all of the time. And furthermore, that right of access is not absolute and may be limited. And in fact, Your Honors, we need look no further than the Wade deed itself. If you look at the Wade deed itself, it contemplates that there are going to be rules and regulations prescribed by the park commissioners at that time that would govern use of that park. In other words, Your Honor, this was never intended to be a free-for-all.
All right, counsel, is another way of saying this is that instead of the Botanical Gardens having to be open 24/7 for all people, they are open to the public for all hours that they are open.
Your Honor, I believe I would agree with that, correct.
Okay, and you think that satisfies the deed language, that as long as the hours that the Botanical Garden are open, anybody from the public can come in, pay to enter, and that suffices?
Correct, Your Honor. And again, we believe that's fully consistent with what the 8th District found in this case, that there would be a distinction when you're talking about the public versus private nature of the use. It would be the distinction, say, between a public park, which is accessible to any member of the public, regardless of their status or standing, versus, say, a country club, which could try and restrict access based on certain qualifications to be able to access the area. That would be the distinction.
Right, Mr. LaVosser, if I can ask you real quick before you move on, then what justifies the Cleveland Botanical Gardens, Holden Arboretum, what justifies any entity profiting from the use of this land?
Well, Your Honor, the Cleveland Botanical Garden is a nonprofit institution. Respectfully, we would reject the idea that's been advanced by the Wade defendants that somehow this land is being monetized and that this is some type of big money grab. The admission revenue, Your Honor, if the Botanical Gardens, which did, as the Wade defendants note, undergo a significant expansion, if it did not have access to these revenue funds, Your Honor, there would be no way that the garden could operate in the form that it does today. And it's frankly never been disputed by the Wade defendants. This is one of Cleveland's cultural gems at this point that is open to the public. Your Honors, I see my time is running down here, and I would like to cede the floor at this point unless there are any further questions.
I have one more. Just that,
yes, Your Honor.
The relationship with the Holden Arboretum, that was a refinancing of the bonds. Was that a money-making activity for CBD?
That was not a money-making activity for CBG at all, Your Honor. In fact, I think it's fair to say that the Holden relationship was very critical to ensuring the survival of the Botanical Garden.
Thank you.
Thank you,
Mr. Hastings.
Good morning, Your Honors. Chief Justice O'Connor, and may it please the court, my name is Stuart Hastings, currently Assistant Director of Law for the City of Cleveland. I'm here arguing on behalf of the City of Cleveland and University Circle Incorporated. Before I address the Marketable Title Act, I just want to point out very quickly on Eric's argument, the deed does contemplate fences are in the deed, and the fences by their very nature will restrict access to the park during some of the time. And the other plausible and we believe more likely interpretation of open all times means more open in perpetuity rather than hours of the day.
But the, getting back to the fences don't comply though. They're not the iron wrought iron fences, right?
Well, the deed contemplates fences, and when the fences are facing in a certain direction, they must be wrought iron.
Okay, thank you.
The Marketable Title Act, Your Honor, the Court of Appeals made four fundamental errors in reading the Marketable Title Act. First, it failed to recognize the special treatment that the Marketable Title Act affords powers of reversion, rights of entry, and powers of termination retained in the root of title and specifically addressed in the second clause of Ohio Revised Code 5301.49A. Second, the Court of Appeals failed and erred in finding that Wade Park cannot be subject to a conventional land transaction, somehow making an exception not written into the Marketable Title Act for grants to public entities. Third, the Court of Appeals erred when it misapplied Ohio Revised Code 5301.51B's continuous possession exception to Revised Code 5301.51A, first clause. We believe the second clause makes the continuous possession argument irrelevant, but even if it were relevant, the continuous possession was misapplied because they piggybacked the Cleveland's continuous possession of the fee simple with the non-continuous possession of the reverter right owned by the Wade heirs.
Can you explain how, if my memory serves me correctly from reading the briefs, didn't the city always say to University Circle, UCI, and the Botanical Gardens, you have to get all the heirs permission to charge a fee, admissions fee, an admission fee? You do that, you're good, you're golden. And it seemed as though my impressions were that never happened. You never got that, but everybody proceeded anyway.
Well, Your Honor, we believe that was unnecessary. But
how was it unnecessary when the city said it was necessary?
Well, the city can make additional requirements to its tenants that are not related to the Wade deed. We can always have more stringent requirements in our leases.
You're saying that was a lease requirement?
Your Honor, that was a lease requirement. Done out of an abundance of caution. Remember, we're dealing with a reverter right, which is a Damascus sword hanging over the city. You want to be super careful, even though good legal minds say it's not necessary. It's still better to get permission. And it's a matter of courtesy to the Wade heirs. I mean, this was a valuable gift to the city. I note in passing that just last Friday, USA Today declared University Circle the number one arts district in the whole United States. Something that Cleveland is very proud of, something Ohio should be very proud of. And the final reason to put things like that in a lease, of course, is to avoid litigation. You know, you don't want to, as we are in right now, litigation with Wade heirs. And again, when the possibility is one of reverter, one, every careful lawyer always tries to be super careful.
To avoid litigation, who filed this lawsuit?
Cleveland Botanical Gardens filed this lawsuit, but it was in response to threatened litigation by the Wade heirs. And in fact, after this lawsuit was filed, two other lawsuits were filed by the Wade heirs. The fourth mistake that the Court of Appeals made in the Marketable Title Act was they misapplied the title transaction exception to the Marketable Title Act. And again, because of the second clause of 5301.49A, we first believe that that's not even applicable. And second, there was no title transaction within time period that would have been prescribed by the Marketable Title Act. Going back to the first error, 5301.49A, second clause, uses the word only, and only with regard to rights of reverter and powers of termination. The reverter right in the Marketable Title Act has given special treatment, and it says a reverter right can only, with no reference to whether it's in the root of title, with no reference to continuous possession, no reference to title transaction, can only be preserved in the matter described in section 5301.51 of the Act. That is the proper reading of the Marketable Title Act as it relates to rights of reverter, which is a case of first impression in this court.
Counsel, you're into rebuttal time.
Oh, thank you, Your Honor. I will save my time for rebuttal.
All right. Mr. Fellerhoff. You'll have to turn your mic on, sir.
Quickly on the MTA, the 8th District got it right. As detailed and as denied by the city, this property is subject to it is a trust. It is a trust that's created and governed by Ohio decisional law and by Ohio statute that finds that it is not a conventional land transaction. This property cannot be transferred. So there is no need to apply the Marketable Title Act to this property. Additionally, all of the arguments being made by the city on the MTA are inconsistent with this court's rulings on the MTA, and they require the insertion of additional words into the statute. Everywhere in the Marketable Title Act, it talks about extinguishing interests that existed prior to the root of title. Here, the reverter is in the root of title. There is no confusion in doing a title search as to whether the reverter exists or not. You go back and look at the deed transferring the property.
Mr. Fellerhoff, let me ask a question.
Sure.
Would there be, is a possible satisfactory solution to at least one of the issues in this case, be that the botanical gardens can continue to charge an admission fee. However, they cannot restrict access based on that admission fee. So in other words, they can charge it, but if somebody wants to come in and not pay it, that would be fine.
That would be consistent with the deed. The deed requires access, open access at all time. The botanical gardens.
Council, I thought, well, maybe I'm mistaken. Did you not agree that the language that it was open to the public does not preclude payment of a fee by the public to use it?
It doesn't preclude, and I think okay. We're getting at this the reverse way. I think the question related to the reason the admission fee is being charged and the reason that
Let's just stop right there. I'm not interested in taking it further because I think I understand what you're going to get at here. I just want us all to agree that open to the public does not preclude an admission charge.
It doesn't preclude an admission charge, but the admission charge that is contingent on entering the park is the problem.
I'm not saying the park. I'm saying the garden. Okay.
Garden is the park. Excuse me. Okay. I apologize.
Okay, you've used your time, and now we have a little over a minute for rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor. Mr. Fellerhoff mentioned that a trust somehow vitiates the Marketable Title Act with how it deals with rights of reverter. Those are very different property sticks. Whether or not there's a trust or that the city is required to hold the property in trust, totally different stick than the right of the heirs to take the property back. So that has nothing to do with it. We deny that there's a trust.
So was this property ever transferred by deed once it was donated by the Wade?
Yes. Okay. Parts of it were donated. I transferred to the Cleveland Art Museum. Parts of it, I believe, were donated to the Veterans Administration for a hospital.
Okay. But those are not subject to this reverter.
No, Your Honor, we believe that none of the property should be subject to the reverter because the Marketable Title Act vitiated it. This is just a red herring that the Wade parties have thrown into this case. It is not relevant at all. And that's the only issue he addressed. I mean, we believe that the Court of Appeals got it wrong on all four applications. The leases that they rely on for the title transaction exception all occurred after the September 1964, which the deadline date for the Marketable Title Act. The continuous possession, again, the Wade heirs have not been in continuous possession of their right of reverter, which is the relevant property stick. And finally, reading 5301.49A, the second clause, it applies to the root of title. It does not make an exception to that. It uses the word only as the only way that one can preserve the right, such as a right of reverter or power of termination.
Thank you. Thank you, gentlemen. We'll take the matter under advisement. You'll be notified of our decision. Marshall, will you call a recess for 10 minutes, please?
The court will now recess for 10 minutes.